This is the Your Vote, Your Voice Election 2020 podcast. Keep it tuned to 1030 The Voice for everything Election 2020. Local and national races, all the updates. Election 2020 lives on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
We're going to talk to candidate Billy Peer. He's a Democrat running for State House in Legislative District 2. But without further ado, Billy Peer, welcome to the studio for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
So let's set the table really quick. It's a huge district. Legislative District 2 is, you were mentioning, 80 miles from kind of tip to tip, roughly. Give us the lay of the land. What's District 2?
That's right. So it's... it starts in the north around 22nd Street. So if you can picture 22nd Street in I-10, and it goes with a few breaks in between, but it goes mostly down the I-19 Santa Cruz River corridor until the country ends at Nogales. And it includes a lot of urban sections, suburban sections, rural communities, mining, ranching, a little bit of everything. It's kind of the gamut of Arizona culture, the gamut of Arizona industry-wise, and it's a really interesting space to campaign.
So here's the other interesting part besides this the geography of the district, and again, it's rather large. There's a couple of things shifting in LD2. Rosanna Gabaldon, who is the incumbent on the House side, has turned out in the House. And so she's going to look to transition to the Senate. And our current senator in LD2, Andrea D'Alessandro, has turned out in the Senate. And so she'll be running to be one of the two House seats in LD2. So we've got a switcheroo happening in both directions, which, as you kind of joked, I'm not sure that the 1994 term limiting had that in mind, but it is the letter of the law. It is allowed. And Daniel Hernandez Jr. Is not termed out. He's running for re-election in the House. And so that's your competition in LD2. Daniel Hernandez, State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro. You picked an easy first race there, didn't you, Billy Peard?
Well, no, I like to tell people I've never encountered anything. I've never tackled anything that's not a challenge. So I'm up for this one as well.
So with that in mind, give us a little bit about your background. And before you give us kind of the short version of how you got to this point, I like to ask candidates this, and it works because it's the name of the show. Tipping point. What was your tipping point? What was that moment where you said, I have to be one of the guys or gals in this race? What was that moment?
Well, I had been contemplating running for office for quite some time. And the tipping point for me, I didn't, of course, know what form or what shape it would take. But the tipping point for me was, frankly, 10 years ago. In 2010, I was living, I grew up here in Tucson, but I was living at the time in 2010 in the East Coast, and I watched from a distance as our state legislature passed in April of 2010 one of the worst pieces of legislation, in my view, in Arizona history, SB 1070, and which kicked off several months and several years of national attention placed on Arizona, and for all the wrong reasons, in my view. That's what planted in my head the idea that I wanted to come back to Tucson, and that I wanted to do something. And I, of course, thought maybe it would include running for office, maybe it would be activism on a different level, but that was a really formative moment for me.
What's been, give us the last two or three years of your as you call it, activism or work in Tucson. What have you been up to the last couple of years?
Well, since early part of 2017, from early 2017 to early 2019, I had been the staff attorney for the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, here in Southern Arizona. Following the 2016 elections, the local ACLU team had decided to dedicate some resources specifically to Southern Arizona, just like everything else in this state. ACLU is predominantly a Maricopa operation in Arizona, but they had decided to invest more resources into Southern Arizona because they wanted to have eyes and ears here on the ground, in large part to take on what was anticipated to be, and I think what proved to be, excesses and abuses by the Trump administration with regard to the border and immigration enforcement. So for 2 years, I was that person, the eyes and ears on the ground here in Southern Arizona. In more recent months, I had worked on the team that was involved with what became Proposition 205. I like to tell people, not the marijuana proposition from 2 years ago, which was also 205, the statewide proposition, but rather the citywide Prop 205, which affectionately is referred to as the Sanctuary City Initiative.
And what's your postmortem on that? And we'll spend 30 seconds or less on it. Did it surprise you, the result? I mean, it for a blue bastion of a community, the numbers surprised some and didn't surprise others. But what did you make of how that turned out?
Well, I think our team didn't know what to expect. We knew that there were going to be large numbers of registered Democrats who perhaps liked the notion of a sanctuary city, perhaps liked the notion of pushing back on the Trump administration and liked the notion of their city government doing so. But we knew there was going to be a significant subset of Democrats who were going to vote no. And a lot of it, from my perspective, I can't speak for the others on the team, from my perspective, money talks. There were more than $300,000 spent against us, raised from predominantly from corporate interests here locally, but also corporate interests from out of state. And we simply didn't have the money to send a counter message out to the 90,000 plus voters in Tucson who ended up casting ballots.
We're with Billy Peard, Democrat candidate for Legislative District 2. When we come back from a short break, I want to get into the choice that voters, especially in the primary here, short term, have in Legislative District 2. Curious to get your assessment, Billy, of how you stack up against your other two competitors. You also highlight a few key issues that seem to be a broad platform, but you speak to a number of issues, I think seven or eight specifically on your website. And I want to dig into a little bit of details and policy on those and give as good of a picture as we can to the Southern Arizona voters listening to the election 2020 primary opportunity to be had here with the Arizona State House Legislative District 2. We'll continue part two with Billy Peard here on Tipping Point after a short break and some messages from our great sponsors. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point for part two of my Get to Know the Candidate conversation, part of our election 2020 coverage with Billy Peard, one of three candidates running for Arizona State House Legislative District 2. We talked about the uniqueness of this race on two counts in the first segment. One is just the size of Legislative District 2. It's a rather large district. But also, who is running and why in District 2? Daniel Hernandez is the incumbent. Andrea D'Alessandro is the state senator from the district who has termed out and will be running for the other House seat. And Rosanna Gabaldon has termed out on the House side and will be running for the Senate. So just some really interesting dynamics in Legislative District 2. And we're with one of those candidates, Billy Peard, today. And on that note, Billy, and we'll use this to get into your platform a little bit. In the primary, Democratic voters will have three options. You, Daniel Hernandez, and Andrea D'Alessandro. If you had to create a contrast, if you had to say, this is why I'm different, and this is why a Democratic voter should vote for me over the other two. Make the case. Give us a little bit of a contrast to process through.
Well, I think in 2020, as we're seeing at the presidential level as well, not to compare myself with any of the presidential field, but I think Democratic voters have a choice, not as far as basic core values. I think most Democratic candidates, including in this race, agree on 80, maybe 90% of core values. But it's a matter of focus and emphasis. If in 2020 you're running for public office, in my view, in Arizona, and you're not talking about education, when Arizona falls 48th, 49th, 50th in the country, depending on your statistical measure, and if you're running for public office in Arizona in 2020 and not talking about water and water scarcity, you're not emphasizing issues like that, and there's others we could list off, but if you're not emphasizing certain key issues that makes Arizona particularly vulnerable as an economy, particularly vulnerable as a society, and you're not offering unique, creative, out-of-the-box ideas and solutions and proposals on those types of issues, candidly, not to put too fine of a point on it, but why are you running for public office if you're not prepared to confront in a creative, dynamic way those core issues?
Certainly, one of the, and for reasons that preceded time in office, Daniel Hernandez Jr. has a lot of name ID in that district and would say, I am an education advocate. So I want to dig in a little bit. Give us maybe a policy difference or something that you've located about his addressing of education issues that you would say, no, I'm doing it. I want to do it better. Look at me.
Well, there was an article just out a couple days ago in the Arizona Mirror, to take one example. Daniel Hernandez, in his 3 going on 4 years in the state legislature, has voted roughly 90% of the time with the Democratic caucus. But I think it's worth focusing on what is that 10%. Historically, it appears that 10% is typically on economic issues, business issues, industry issues, where he and one or two other key Democrats, moderate Democrats in the state house, are flipping over to vote with the GOP. Just yesterday, in fact, Mr. Hernandez voted with his GOP colleagues on a bill on a bill that arguably is related to climate change, but is probably he voted with GOP out of business considerations. When we're talking about education, we are talking about taxation. And my concern is that Mr. Hernandez is more inclined, has a greater propensity to side with his GOP colleagues when he's asked to whether to favor or oppose tax loopholes, when he's called upon to close potentially tax loopholes. Democrats are going to likely, I don't want to jinx it, but are likely to take control of the state house in the 2020 elections for the first time since 1966. And when they do so, I think it's important we have Democrats in solidly blue districts like Legislative District 2, where we don't have to ask the question, is our representative from that district going to flip over to the GOP and widen our fiscal gap and thereby take away basic critical funding from K-12 education. And I think I can make a case in this race that there's a significant risk that reelecting Mr. Hernandez is not a sure bet on closing those tax loopholes and increasing the pool of resources for K-12 education.
I want to get to water in a second, but just to finish this conversation, what would you say to business owners in LD2? Even Democratic business owners, assuring them that their interests will be held in mind as well by a Billy Peard representative?
The number one response to that question is, I will talk and I will listen. I will pay attention. When you talk to business, first of all, when we talk about business owners, what I'm focusing on are small business owners, local businesses, not corporate interest businesses. And when I talk to small business owners throughout Legislative District 2, what I hear are things like, we're ignored. Our interests are ignored. I'll give an example. In Santa Cruz County, there's a pervasive message that I hear from business owners who say, they're not talking about taxes. That's not what they're concerned about. What they're primarily concerned about is the bureaucracy. What they're primarily concerned about is red tape in terms of getting into business in the first place, or if you're a small restaurant owner or a small shopkeeper, getting the adequate permits, the necessary permits to expand your business, and not knowing how to navigate that process, and it being, frankly, a Byzantine process for many business owners.
You list water as one of your primary issues as well, and certainly a lot of our callers and listeners to this show and this station are concerned about our water supply and the sustainability of our housing and our growth, how that matches with water. Just in interest of time, what's one state house-led policy around water that is either concerning to you or that you'd like to be a part of implementing should you be elected by the LD2 voters?
There's been a few proposals this year, led in large part by Representative Engel, and I tip my hat to her and other of her colleagues. I think the single, there's a number of wonky things, and water law is complicated, but one of the single most important things in my mind is we have to lend some reform to the what we call the Groundwater Act of 1980. In 1980, the legislature, under the leadership of Governor Babbitt, passed what was really a pretty revolutionary piece of legislation that lent systematic reform to the way we draw down our groundwater reserves. And it was a good bill for the time, and it still has its strengths. But that was 40 years ago. We need to reform it. We need to modernize the Groundwater Act. And if elected, I'll pay a particular attention to that. I think some of the legislators this session are trying to achieve much of that through bits of legislation. I think there's currently 5 or 6 pieces of legislation pending on different things, ranging from wells to how we manage our drawdown of aquifers in the rural parts of the state.
Your website is billypeard.com. You list a number of issues that you want to speak into through the campaign. The third one, just to touch on real quick, is democracy. Probably not an issue that you'll see on many candidates' front page as a top issue. Give us the kind of 60-second review of why that's an issue for you.
Well, all the other issues, frankly, stem from that one, and it's the fountainhead issue. In an era, what we lawyers call a post-Shelby era, an era since 2013 when there is no longer federal oversight of our elections processes, where a state, either through the legislature or through administrative changes, can limit the electorate, can require more ID, impose more ID requirements for voting, etc. We have to, at a state level, in that post-Shelby era, where there's no federal oversight, we need to self-regulate better. We need to have a check on how we are enfranchising or disenfranchising, how we decide who votes and who does not vote among the citizenry. And that's what I hope to do if elected, is really have a fine-tooth comb and look at what we're doing. We need to, frankly, expand the electorate or expand the franchise.
BillyPeard.com. That about brings us to time, and would love to continue the conversation, but I'd cut you off in 30 seconds, so I won't do that. But Billy, thank you for spending some time with us. Again, Democrat running for State House Legislative District 2. BillyPeard.com is where you can go find out more information, and good luck on the trail. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Zach.